Hello, everyone, and welcome to the final season of the official Lost audio podcast. No tears, though, no crying. We have several hours to go of Lost, which means many hours of podcasting. We're here today with executive producers Damon Lindelof and Carlton Cuse to rehash the two-hour season premiere entitled LAX. They'll also take fan questions and maybe drop a few hints about our upcoming episode called What Kate Does. That airs on Tuesday, February 9th from 9 till 10:01 p.m. Also, before we turn it over to the guys, we have a new email address for you to send your fan questions to, lostfanquestions@abc.com, all one word. At the end of the podcast, I'll have the legalese you need to listen to in order to submit your questions. But for now, let's turn it over to executive producers Damon Lindelof and Carlton Cuse.
Good morning, Damon.
Hello, Carlton.
Welcome to season six.
Good God, how did we get here?
God, it's been a long time since we've done a podcast, hasn't it?
It's, yeah, it has. It would be a little weird if we'd actually been doing podcasts when Lost wasn't on. But
well, you know.
Now we have an excuse to do them.
Exactly.
We'll have to start trying on a subject matter for the future once Lost is over so we can continue podcasting.
That's true. We could do sports.
Ooh.
Or just really geeky things.
Sports are frightening to me. Geeky things much more in my comfort zone.
Okay. Well, that's good.
Look, let's be honest, Carlton. People don't want to hear us talk about sports. They want to hear us talk about...
They want to hear us talk about Lost.
Lost.
So, in speaking of Lost, Damon, let's get back. Let's just jump right
let's
back into it.
Let's just jump into the pool.
So,
let's go. The bubbling pool of brown water.
So, shall we rehash LA space X?
Yes, LA space X. And obviously, there is sort of an intentional gap between LA and X. We're not going to reveal our intentions, are we?
No, we're not. But when you watch the premiere, you obviously can arrive at several different interpretations as to what LAX possibly means. It could be LAX, as though the X means it's been negated. Hmm. Or it could be LA typo X.
Interesting.
Or it could be LAX marks the spot, right?
Interesting. Or there's a missing letter in between LA and X.
Wow.
Like an R, perhaps? So,
larks?
Yeah, larks.
That's fantastic.
Because the whole season is just a big
lark. I hadn't even thought about that. That's good.
More importantly, I think sort of the question on the top of everybody's mind in the sort of wake of the premiere. And the cool thing is, Carlton and I obviously, you know, get immediate feedback from sort of our spouses and the people around us. But then we have friends who sort of email us in reaction to the show. And it feels like kind of everybody is very dialed into this idea of the sideways, these flash sideways.
Yeah.
So the operative question seems to be, you know, what are the flash sideways? What do these things mean? What is their relationship to the island? Are you guys doing two different shows this year? Is it Sliding Doors? Carlton, will you definitively now answer, please, the mystery of the flash sideways? It's unfair to make people wait another week to find out any more.
That is true. Okay, so we have two distinct timelines that we are showing you on the show. One timeline seems to be derived from a theory that when the bomb went off, exactly what Faraday was postulating occurred. There was a reset, and basically 815 flew over what was once the island, landed in LA, and these people never experienced the crash, never met each other by crashing on the plane, and there's a timeline going forward. The other timeline, obviously, is on the island. Juliet hit the bomb. It basically jumped them, you know, forward in time, but they're still stuck on the island, and they're dealing with the consequences of the fact that they're still marooned there.
Right.
Now, Damon, would you explain to me, because I'm confused, there were certain things that went on the plane that were different than what I remember from the pilot. I mean, for instance, I don't remember Desmond being on the plane.
Sure.
There was like a Shannon and Boone issue. So yep. What am I to make of the fact that basically, the narrative in these so-called flash sideways seems to be different than the narrative in the flashbacks?
Right. This is an excellent question, Carlton. So, you know, and I just one clarification. I think a lot of people are referring to these things as as an alternate timelines, and we want to go out of our way to basically not use that word. We're not interested in alternate anything, alternate realities, alternate timelines,
or any word, or the word bizarro associated with the show in any fashion.
Exactly. To basically imply that one of these timelines, either the island or off the island, is less than real is just borderline offensive to me, Carlton. They are both equally real and hopefully will reconcile in some way. That being said,
I hope they reconcile. Okay. I mean, I would be very disappointed to go through the end of this season and not understand what the interrelation between these two timelines is.
I wouldn't blame you. That being said,
explain to me what are we to make of these differences?
So here's the thing. Faraday basically said, if you blow up this bomb, the hatch never gets built. If the hatch never gets built, Desmond never forgets to push the button. And if Desmond never forgets to push the button, then there's not an electromagnetic event that crashes A-15. What he doesn't take into account is that as a result of detonating a nuclear device in 1977, that might create some other changes in people's lives. If you step on a butterfly and there are like massive changes, imagine what would happen if you were to detonate a nuclear bomb on top of a butterfly.
Is that possibly why the island is underwater?
I think that is definitely probably the most pervasive theory right now, and perhaps one that we'll be addressing later in the show. But more importantly, Desmond. Desmond's on the plane, so this is our first indication that things are different. Jack seems to recognize him. Does he recognize him because they met in the stadium together? Well, would Desmond have been at the stadium if he wasn't training for a race around the world? Like, you know, so would he have been training for a race around the world if the island had never existed? What happened to Charles Widmore in 1970? So all these great questions are basically being raised. But more importantly, how does it affect our characters? And so anything goes. So when Locke says, hey, I was on a walkabout, you start to wonder, was he? Well, no, he seems lying. To be lying. Yeah. But when Sun says no English, was she lying, Carlton?
I don't know. I'm going to have to wait and see.
So everything is up in the air. And all we can say is this. You think that not that many things have changed, but a lot more things have changed than you probably think, and that's going to be the exploration of the season.
But the characters are essentially the same. I mean, right. Kate's still a fugitive, Hurley's still a lottery winner, Jack's still a doctor. I mean, the archetype of the characters haven't altered, right. Have they?
But it's a nature versus nurture thing where you basically say, Hurley's a lottery winner, but this time around he thinks he's the luckiest guy in the world. Right. So you basically say, he's still the same guy, but what series of events have led him to believe that he's lucky?
I just have one more question about this, and that is, that's pretty dense and kind of confusing. And I'm watching the show, like, do I really need to know, like, what happened in all the flashbacks? I mean, can I just watch these flash sideways as their own narrative storyline? Do I need to bring any history from past seasons of the show to enjoy and follow what's going on in the Flash sideways?
Well, Carlton, you should probably have some understanding of the flashbacks because you are writing the show.
Oh.
But if you're using the hypothetical you,
yes.
Then absolutely not. You should be able to sort of watch these stories and engage in them. They are a little bit like the flashbacks of seasons your, where they have a beginning, middle, and end. But there is this X factor, which is there are going to be subtle things that make you kind of wonder what the hell's going on.
Can I ask you one more question?
Yes.
How many seasons back does it take to become a season yore? I mean, like, you know, seasons yore, that's like, that's not just like, last season wouldn't be a season
right.
yore, would it?
No, I think like by the end of season two, we left the yore phase and
okay.
entered the, what I call the my phase.
I think what that's cool because like, I like the fact that you can just watch the Flash sideways. They're their own narrative. And that feels like season one. I mean, it's like you're learning about these characters all over again. You're getting to really understand who they are sort of a second time, which is great.
But I think that people are saying, because the flashbacks of yore were about our characters making decisions that led them to the island, and now these sideways, basically what is their relationship to the island itself? Why should this matter? Why should I care about what's happening in these stories? What are the stakes of these stories? All that we can say is you're just going to have to be patient.
Okay. Wow.
That's all we can say. But
exactly.
But we probably should prehash the second episode of the show, the third hour of the show, which is going to be on Tuesday night at 9 p.m., 8 p.m. Central, which is called What Kate Does. And
right.
That is sort of a corresponding reference to a previous episode that we did called What Kate Did.
Right.
As one might imagine, Kate will probably figure into this episode. We do feel that the premiere had a lot going on. You got your smoke monster, and you got your temple, and your guitar case.
By the way, did I say that Locke was the smoke monster?
You did say that. Okay. Yes. You
mentioned on national TV?
Yeah, you did mention it. I think that makes it official. A couple hours before, some, you know, the audience at the Jimmy Kimmel Live show had seen it. So, you know, we should have... but then you chastised them. You were like, well, it's your own...
You came
it's
here.
It's your own darn fault for
showing up. Well, I mean, I think they had to expect if they were going to go to Jimmy Kimmel and we were on the show and it was after the show aired on the... in the East Coast.
Apparently, it wasn't obvious to some people that Locke was the smoke monster. So,
okay. You know, well, I stand corrected. I do feel like sometimes it's good to provide a little clarification. Right. I mean, we can't dodge all the time.
I do have one question, though.
All right.
I know it's a Kate episode, but are we going to get any sense of what the hell happened to Saeed in this episode? Are people going to start wondering what is up with
that's
him? He was dead, Carlton.
Yeah.
I thought dead is dead on this island. That's what you told. You keep telling me that.
Well, you know what? I mean, the question is, was he dead? And I think the second question is, you know, what does it mean that he's up and walking around? What are the consequences of the fact that they threw him in the murky water? Clearly, it would have been better if that water was clear.
Here's what I think. I think you just backdoored the zombie season on me.
I did.
I think you did.
Exactly. So that would be
very cleverly done.
Hey, before I forget, we wanted to give a shout out.
Podcast shout out.
Yes, to Willie Smith.
Willie Smith
works in politics in Oregon and has a new baby named Avery, and is apparently a fan of these podcasts, which is hard to believe.
I'm sorry to hear that, Willie. I hope as in those sleepless nights of new fatherhood, you find comfort in the podcasts of yore. You can go back and listen to earlier podcasts.
Oh my god. Are we going
to
like
Carlton, let's get to some questions.
Let's get on to some questions.
Sorry, yeah. Willie.
Okay. All right. Basically, this is from Punch Drunk. Answer me these questions why. Starting out very nice grammatically.
Fair enough.
Could you please somehow incorporate Bob Stenzel into an episode as an Easter egg? This guy has the talent and tenacity like a venereal disease during the Middle Ages.
Wow.
These are the words of Punch Drunk. Bob, they're not ours. I think better of Bob Stenzel than to compare him to a middle ages. A venereal disease of yore.
Yeah, what's great is venereal diseases are always tenacious, but to basically just say, just so you know, let's make sure that we make sure that Bob Stenzel, he's the kind of tenacious that cannot be cured by traditional antibiotics. So the answer is yes. We will absolutely try to get him in there.
Can a venereal disease have tenacity? I don't know.
Is that the second question?
No. The second question is, will you get the chance to finally reveal how or why Walt kills animals and why Vincent has survived at all in his care? Sub-question, as you've already said, this isn't happening in Hurley's head. Is this all happening in Vince's head? Frankly, that would still be better than the St. Elsewhere ending.
Well, there you go. I mean, I think we've spoken in the past that our favorite sort of pitched ending for the show is that it's all happening in Vincent's head, so I think we can rule that out. And look, Walt does not intentionally kill animals, but if he's hanging out near glass and birds happen to be in the vicinity, I wouldn't want to be a bird.
It's the bird's problem. I mean, maybe Walt attracts the bird, but the bird has the glass problem itself. It's like, oh, I want to see Walt, but then boom, into the glass.
Is it possible that Walt emits some sort of high frequency, you know, sort of sound that only birds can hear?
I think that to explain exactly how Walt attracts birds would be very midichlorian.
Yeah.
So I don't think we should talk about that.
Well,
but you might have just spoiled it.
I respectfully disagree, but anything else from Punch Drunk?
No, I think that's kind of, I think it's time to move on. Thank you.
Carlton, this is a bit of a doozy. This is the sort of big question, but sort of bear with me here.
All right.
This is from Seth Jacob. Longtime fan of the show, podcast here. Know the podcast's all business, so let's get down to brass tacks. The numbers. I think I know what they really mean. Bear with me. Most diehard Lost fans know about the numbers connection to the infamous Valenzetti equation. Supposedly, the numbers 4, 8, 15, 16, 23, 42 represent core factors in an equation that predicts the end of the world. And while I was reading The Stand, one of the show's many influences in a generally awesome book, blah, 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 yada, 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 but there's a countdown clock, and it occurred to me that it was the same amount of digits as from Lost. Do the numbers, Carlton?
What? I'm sorry.
Do the numbers represent a date? April 8th, 2015, 4 o'clock, 23 minutes and 42 seconds. Is this the end of the world? Will Neil Frogert ever find justice? All these questions and more. Keep me tuning in. Thanks for putting together a truly great epic. So, Carlton, first, do the numbers correspond to a date?
No.
And will Neil Frogert ever find justice?
I think yes. I think Neil Frogert somehow is destined to for happy ending. I mean, you know, this is not a show where there's a lot of happiness, but I would be, it would be dismaying in some way if, well, he did get shot with a flaming arrow on the island, but those of you who watched the premiere
which
saw...
Which is a happier ending than some.
Well, yes, but he had a sort of a tremendous role in the premiere wearing a sleep mask sitting between Boone and Locke.
Yes,
and
apparently, like, one of our favorite memories is that that Eddie and Adam and Liz, our executive producers and writers, were sitting with Evangeline watching the screening, and when she saw the Locke Boone scene, she pointed at the screen and said, Frogert!
Yeah!
So it's nice to know that even Evie has a Frogert appreciation.
It was good.
Moving on, Carlton.
All right. You'll see more of Frogert. If you like Frogert, Frogert's run is not done. How about that? Okay, Damon, you ready?
Yes.
This is from Rachel Jaworski. Hi, Darlton. While recently getting my friends hooked on Lost, I noticed something in season one I never noticed before. When Jack and the crew are checking out the caves for the first time, they find the bodies of Adam and Eve, as well as two stones, one black and one white. Any chance these stones are related to our friends in white, Jacob, and his nemesis in black? Rachel W. from Red Deer, Alberta.
Wow, hold on a second. I had completely forgotten about that. Adam and Eve. All right, well, we still have a couple episodes left to write, so we'll see if we can take that on.
I'm wondering whether, like, is that one of those questions that's a reasonable expectation for the audience to find out who Adam and Eve are? And maybe, are we going to see the stones again? Because, like, the stones were some of my favorite characters in the show.
Well, look, let's be honest. We are in talks with the stones representatives. It's white stones, you think, oh, just paint a rock white. No. I mean, the stones that we cast in that episode are in high demand and very big in Asian cinema, from what I understand. So we'll see what we can do, and if they are technically available, maybe we will bring them back.
Okay.
But I think that it would probably be fair to say that every time you've ever seen a dead body on the show, we like to, especially if you see the remains, we like to explain who they were before. So when you saw who Sawyer affectionately referred to as Skeletor in the Dharma van, we later revealed that that was in fact Roger Linus.
And we saw Montan with, you know, as a skeleton without his arm.
Right.
In
he was reading Kierkegaard.
Yeah.
Apparently. So kids, that's what happens when you read Kierkegaard.
You risk losing your arm.
Yeah. All right, Carlton, I've got a question for you. This is a short one, and
hit
it's
me.
From Charles M. Phelps.
Okay.
When Hurley got off the island, this is in sort of the Oceanic Six, when he left the island, did he ever pay Walt the $83,000 that he owed him from backgammon losses? Yes or no, Carlton? Easy question.
No, I think that, you know, the debt was forgiven in the spirit of, you know, having left the island.
Alrighty.
Thank
Good.
You, though. That was
you
our
say you weren't
going to
get answers this season.
There are some answers. All right, I'm turning to my next question. This is from Chaz. Howdy, Dame Carr. Love
now we're talking, because I'll be honest, I only get one letter in Darlton.
No, you get two. You get the D-A.
I would argue that it's your A, because my A is a long A, day. It's your is a short A, ah. So it's Darlton. It's not Darlton, you know. So I get one letter. This
you get the first letter, though.
This Day Carr, or
Dame
Carr.
Dame Carr.
Dame Carr.
Dame
we each
Carr.
Get three letters.
Dame Carr.
Finally, equity.
Okay.
Do you think Brangelina has this fight?
I don't know.
All right.
Okay. So, Chaz loves the show and has been an avid Lost fan since season one. I was curious if the decision to air the premiere of season six on Groundhog's Day was a specific choice or just a coincidence.
This is a great question, and the fact of the matter is that our boss, Steve McPherson over at ABC, and Jeff Bader, who is basically the guy who does all the scheduling, called Carlton and I, and basically we were hoping against hope that we would be on Tuesday nights because we love watching Modern Family, which is on Wednesdays. It's highly successful, and they didn't want to move it. And we are always up against Idol on Wednesdays. At least Tuesdays at 9, there will be a part of the year where we're not up against Idol. So when they called and said, you're going to be on Tuesdays at 9, we were thrilled. And then they said, funny thing, it also happens to be Groundhog Day. And from what we understand, that's got a lot to do with what you guys are doing on the show this year. So we debated trying to pretend like it was completely intentional, but this is just one of those happy coincidences. But Carlton, don't mistake coincidence for fate.
I never will.
All right. This is from Jill from Toronto, Canada. Dear Damon and Carlton, am I pronouncing that correctly in Canadian? I'm a huge fan of the show, but I have to say I'm relieved season six is the last season. Last year, on the day of the Lost season premiere, I sliced open my foot and needed it stitched. On the day of this year's premiere, I threw out my back. and have been bedbound for 3 days. If you guys can do anything to rid me of this lost premiere curse, I'd greatly appreciate it. My question is, have you ever found things in your real lives connecting back to theories of the show in unusual ways? Cheers, Jill.
Wow.
Who is bedridden.
Poor Jill. We hope you're feeling better by the time you hear this podcast, and that in some small way it relieves you of your premiere curse.
I wonder if when Jill was getting her foot stitched up, someone counted to five. That's just all. That's
true.
My secret wish.
All I can say is I hope that Jill doesn't go to Dr. Jack Shepard, because he's really not that effective as a doctor.
Yeah, he has. His intention is to fix you, but you usually end up dying.
I mean, you know.
His heart's in the right place.
I mean, he would actually, Jill, if you were being treated by Jack Shepard, he probably would take your leg off with a baggage door, and that would, you know. But then you wouldn't be worried about your back.
That's
so
right.
That would be good. Well, you know, we did actually in the, you can actually probably see the reenactment somewhere in the archives of ABC.com of Damon and I having a sort of miraculous cross at Disneyland. You know, it was very Lostian. I mean, people at the very beginning of the show were always asking us, isn't this weird that these characters cross through each other's lives? Like, how could that actually happen?
It seems very contrived.
And then Damon and I discovered that we had actually had this kind of really cool cross that had occurred sort of at Disneyland before we even knew each other. And Chris White, our wonderful producer, was responsible, along with Jeff Fortas here, for sort of reenacting it with characters actually playing us. So is that available somewhere, Chris? Is that still
I'm sure we can put it back up.
Why don't you put that back up, and if people want to see that. There is sort of an example of one that we took from real life. It was actually dramatized, and we're actually hoping if they put it back up, someone might buy the movie rights, and it might be a major motion picture.
Let's be honest,
starring,
Carlton, you just want it back up because I was portrayed by a 6 foot tall woman in a bald wig. It's just nice to know that, you know.
I thought, while maybe not your physical type, she did capture the sort of emotional trueness of your soul.
In the glass half full sort of scenario, I go, it's actually nice that I'm perceived as tall in some circles, but not so nice that I'm perceived as a bald woman. That's just my feeling about it.
It's great to be back. We're looking forward to a fun season of podcasts with you. We're really happy that you're still listening here at the end of this. And
I stopped listening 15 minutes ago.
And we will we'll see you next week. And sadly, but we're very excited to actually offer our pre-congratulations to Chris White, our producer, who is about to have his first child, and so he might not be with us for the next few podcasts, but
and I just
for a very good reason.
I just want to say, Chris, we don't know the gender yet, but Dame Car, perhaps, as a name? Just saying.
Although Darlton White rolls off your tongue pretty well.
Alrighty, let's get out of here.
Okay, adios.
Namaste.
See you soon. Bye.
That's it for this podcast. Join us again next time for more fun with Damon and Carlton. Until then, you can send your questions, comments, and concerns to lostfanquestions@abc.com, all one word. And maybe, just maybe, the guys will perhaps answer or at least make fun of them. Please note that by submitting your questions, you agree to ABC's terms of use, and you agree to have your name, city, state, and question included in this podcast. All submissions become the property of American Broadcasting Companies Incorporated and may be used, edited, republished, or published in any manner and in any media throughout the world in perpetuity without compensation. You must be 18 years or older to send email to abc.com.